Hi, and welcome to Misspoken, a lady-centric live lit show featuring writers, performers, comedians, essayists, and bloggers exploring a new theme each month. More information can be found at miss-spoken.com. The following is a recording of the debut show on May 28, 2014 at the Gallery Cabaret. This month's theme, boobs.
Hope you guys are ready to hear some stories about boobs, because that's what's going to happen. So yeah, first up, we have our very own Carly Oishi, who's right there next to me. Yay! And Carly Oishi is a writer, performer, singer, songwriter, and caretaker. She's the co-producer of Misspoken, I know, the blog, miss-spoken.com, and live lit show. She's also the singer and full-time songwriter in her duo, John and Carly, which has been making and performing music for almost 10 years. And she's going to tell you a story!
Thank you. I do want to mention, if you haven't gone yet, we do have a blog. We update it Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It's miss-spoken.com. Yeah, that's all I have to say about that. Okay. I always thought I was like everyone else growing up. I wish my hair was naturally curly. I wish I was thinner. I wish I was taller. I got a perm. I highlighted my hair, and I sported violet-colored contacts my senior year in high school. My mom asked me if I was trying to be white. I'm not sure when I realized being Asian factored into my attractiveness, but when I did, I didn't really want to play into it. So I did try to set myself apart from the two other Asian girls in my school, Korean sisters, who even the principal got me confused with. But I wasn't stereotypically Asian anyway, except for the short part, and I guess the bad eyesight and the jet black hair. And I was always a little chubby. I turned 10 shades darker in the summer, so much so I didn't look related to my parents. I wasn't soft-spoken or a violin prodigy, and I had boobs. I don't know when they showed up, but they did. And I decided I'd rather be known for my boobs than for being Asian. Except I wasn't entirely sure how to go about this. Cleavage had always made me uncomfortable for some reason, my own and other people's. I probably spent the majority of my life in the wrong size bra. The best I could muster in the late 90s was to stock my wardrobe with tight-fitting baby doll t-shirts. My boobs became the only part of my body I actually liked. They were allowed to be big and to stick out. I felt like none of my other features were worth showing off. I didn't have the prettiest face or the longest legs or the flattest stomach. So for a while, I decided it was kind of cool to be an Asian girl with big tits. Though that started to feel kind of weird and pornish. There's a lot of discomfort in being sexualized first as a woman, second as an Asian, and third as an Asian woman with a rack. It's a conflict I faced a lot when I was online dating. I don't know if you've read a lot of analysis on this topic. OkCupid has been known to publish blogs on the things they gleaned from the huge amount of data collected through the site. They talked about all kinds of things, like which photos were the best and how to create the perfect profile. But the ones that always stuck out the most were the findings on race. It turns out being an Asian woman was the best in terms of the fact that men of all races were interested in us. I suppose I should be flattered by that information, right? Except it all felt kind of gross. Here was proof that we were coveted for many reasons, ranging from innocent interest in Asian culture to super creepy fetishism. Instead of it seeming like an advantage, it was more like a burden. How many guys would I have to wade through to make sure they weren't only interested in me because of my ethnicity? Yet, on the other hand, was there something entirely wrong with that? And furthermore, should my photos convey that I was busty, too? In the end, I didn't want to play any of it up. I couldn't exactly hide the fact that I was Asian, but I didn't talk about it in my profile. Not how much I actually loved Japanese food or how I traveled there for the first time a few years ago. I didn't joke about how I did play the piano but was not good at math. And I didn't want the one physical feature I felt pretty good about. There are so many unspoken rules about how you expose your body, and no matter how good you look, showing things off too much means you're a slut. Low-cut tops and short shorts means you're some kind of person. I unconsciously pull the shoulders out from the tops, but I feel like my V-neck is too risque, or tug the hemline of my skirt if it seems too close to the bottom of my ass. Because I don't want to be asking for it. I don't want the catcalls or the street harassment, and yet when you're single and looking, you don't want to be ignored either. We know it's the way we look that catches someone's attention, but how to use what you've got is an annoying exercise in unspoken etiquette, an invisible line that's almost impossible to detect. I want to be modest, but not too conservative. I want to look sexy, but not skanky. I want to look good, but not like I try too hard. But the middle ground for boobs is so much harder. There is a perfect size, somewhere between kind of big and big, and everyone that falls outside of it is corrected by push-up bras or minimizers. Unless you are all out trying to hide them, they are just there, making it impossible for button-down shirts to lay flat, unintentionally turning a scoop-neck shirt into something indecent, making regular shirts look tight. And like my struggle with using my Asianness as an advantage, I struggle with how to utilize my boobs. When you spent most of your adult years trying not to be objectified for your ethnicity, but sort of think you might not mind being objectified for your body because you think this is what it means to be attractive and desired, it's a conflict I think of with every outfit I choose. Ultimately, I've decided they should be a surprise. I can't conceal my ethnicity, but I can do things to keep you guessing about my bra size. I figured any guy could get through a couple, okay, sometimes one, dates, and there was genuine interest and attraction on both sides, could be rewarded by the extra added bonus of my big boobs, assuming they were into that kind of thing. Thank you. Okay, up next we have Melanie LaForce, originally from Cleveland. Melanie holds a PhD in social psychology and works as an education researcher at the University of Chicago. She writes occasionally for websites such as Hairpin and Thought Catalog. She also posts irregularly on her blog, theamericana.com, and is trying to procrastinate less and write more. Her hobbies include emotional eating and flirting with college boys. She lives with her husband Dave, 2 months, and a foster turtle in Logan Square. You can follow her nonsense on Twitter at Riley Coyote. Please welcome Melanie LaForce.
How are you? Thanks for kind of skipping the Hawks game to be here with us tonight. I know it's a little bit tough for me, but keeping an eye out this whole time. So when Rose first told me about this event tonight, I just got really excited because I love boobs. I mean, everybody loves boobs, but boobs are kind of my thing, and I kind of invented them. So I was really excited about this, and I joked to a friend that my plan was just to kind of get up here and brag about my knackers for 10 minutes, and then mic drop, be done. I was joking, but then I was thinking, and my narcissism kind of got the better of me, and so that's pretty much what I plan to do for the next 10 minutes. Unfortunately, Rose would not allow me to read topless, though, so whatever. Okay. Right? Got a little bit going on here. All right. So I was about 10 when I first learned that the little pink knobs a few inches above my belly button were slightly more special than just appendages that resembled chutes and ladders game pieces. My memory for my childhood is shit, but I remember this instance, unfortunately, all too clearly. I was in my room, putting together a killer ensemble that consisted of jorts and a white tank top with lace edges. It's not important to the story, but I was also chewing some stolen Bubblicious as well, because rebel. I was headed out for an exciting dad-daughter adventure, a trip to the hardware store for some miscellaneous light bulbs. My dad came upstairs to the door of my room, took one look at my thin white tank top, and kindly asked me to please change my shirt. I knew that you could see my nipples, but I just didn't realize that it was a big deal until I was asked to change. I nonchalantly agreed to change, but felt that first rush of body-induced shame. I mean, you can't blame my father for not wanting to take his 10-year-old burgeoning daughter to a hardware store in Northeast Ohio looking like a drunk sorority girl. But yeah, the incident certainly didn't do any favors for my emerging daddy issues either. To this day, when I want to be shamefully naughty, I'll dig out a good old white tank top and strut around braless. But again, Rose would not let me tonight. The next 10 years or so, my breasts essentially languish. I have very few memories of my teen breasts, oddly. But I think this is largely due to the fact that they weren't all that prominent until my early adulthood. I'm not sure if they grew slowly, or I just didn't show them off at all, or likely a combination. I just remember that my teen breasts were laughably unimpressive, especially during my high school years. I mean, really, most of my teen body was. I remember walking by the soccer team one day after lunch and hearing a unanimously audible, "Eh." Despite that deep down I wanted to be a teen sex pot, I found my non-boobs amusing, so much so that I authored several zine articles about their lacklusterness in 10th and 11th grade. My zine was off the hook, incidentally. I made the classic jokes about the concavity of my titular cavities, and the inability of my male classmates to figure out where my breasts actually were during obviously short-lived romances. Me and my tiny titties, we were pretty cool. Okay, so now we're getting into the bragging years. At some point in my early 20s, my breasts became kind of amazing. The only scientific reason I can think for this, for the rapid development of my breasts from my late teens to early 20s, is the countless calories ingested while shotgunning Natty Ice in college. In addition, I also discovered hormonal birth control, available at the Student Center for just $4 a month. All told, I gained a good cup size in my college years, and thus am eternally grateful to both beer and unnatural amounts of estrogen. The advent of camera phones came along shortly after, and I embraced this technology to garner mutual admiration for my breasts. I've made plenty of unsuspecting males and females take a gander. I'm kinda that girl, and if you know me for more than 2 weeks, you're probably gonna get a boob text. Twitter came along, and I would spend an inordinate amount of time crafting love poem tweets to my breasts. I was a walking infomercial for my boobs. They had been the underdogs for so long, I was ready for them to have their moment in the sun. Like many women, I gained peak physical confidence in my late 20s and 30s. In early 2007, at age 29, I joined the Windy City Rollers. At this point, my boobs really blew up, no pun intended. In Derby, politically correct or not, our bodies become communally shared property. If I could guess the number of times I've been felt up by a fellow skater, I'd guess that number to be somewhere in the low hundreds, truthfully. In Derby, we are always, always touching each other. We tangibly admire each other's meat legs, face bruises, and yes, erogenous zones. By the time I joined the league, I had developed a large amount of titty pride, so it was a match made in heaven. Playing a female-centric sport gave me an altered sense of body confidence. Women with a myriad of body types played derby, and we were all mutually lauded for both the athleticism and sexuality of our parts. Thick legs, big asses, they're desirable. These are functionally beautiful in the world of contact sports. A common drill in roller derby is called a pace line. Skaters, usually 10 to 20, form a single file line and do a variety of drills, jumps, maneuvering, sprints, etc., over the course of 5 to 20 minutes. The pace line is where a lot of the body love happens. Countless times, the skater behind me in the pace line not only verbally admired the growing strength of my booty, but also gave me a nice little reach around nipple squeeze. There's a lot of love. In 2009, so much of the Windy City Rollers family had seen and touched my breasts that I actually won a league award for having the best breasts, the Golden Tickets Award, which I actually brought with me and I will pass around shortly hereafter. Concrete proof that my girls are punk rock as fuck. I could not have been more proud than if I had won an award based on actual athletic talent. I began to use my breasts as a bartering tool. One of my best friends, Mariah, is a talented photographer and a fellow skater. She has a particular admiration for my breasts. One year, I was dissatisfied with my roller derby promo headshot because in it my teeth looked kind of horsey, so I begged her to shoot me a new one. In return, I promised to let her do a photo shoot of my boobs. A topless photo of me with a taxidermy turkey still hangs in her living room. And I got a killer headshot. In 2012, my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer, which is kind of a buzzkill. In addition to her diagnosis, her mother had also died of breast cancer when she was 11. The year of my mom's cancer treatment was a tough one, but after a double mastectomy and a round of chemo, she's cancer-free, thank God. It was highly recommended by her physicians that I begin to see a specialist and start the tornado of diagnostic testing. In the past couple of years, I've become intimately familiar with mammograms, breast MRIs, breast ultrasounds, and biopsies. I could wax about these experiences for a while, particularly how a mammogram feels like a night in a frat house, but those are stories for another day. I think a lot about the future of my breasts. Through medical math magic, my breast specialist has informed me that my chances of developing breast cancer based on family history, lifestyle, and other risk factors are about 3 times that of the average woman, which is not insignificant. However, that still puts my risk at somewhere in the low to mid 30% range. I'm still more likely, technically, to not get cancer. Unfortunately, despite being a statistician by trade, I'm first and foremost a pessimist. Deep down, I know at some point I'm gonna lose these sweet, beautiful porcelain titties, and it's gonna be shitty as hell. I've based a lot of my identity around my breasts, and the loss of them will literally and figuratively take a piece of me away. You'd think that the information gained in the past year would have made me more humble, more respectful of my breasts, but it's made me so much worse. I maintain a rigorous schedule of daily breast selfies, With my newfound knowledge of the potential impermanence of my breasts, I feel it's my noble duty to share what I've been given with the world while I still can. Although I hold pride in my other achievements, like being an accomplished researcher at one of the best universities in the world and skating with a nationally ranked athletic league, I mean, let's face it, these melons are the fucking pinnacle. I'm totally okay with my legacy being based solely on my mammary glands. We're all just trying to make the world a better place, two nipples at a time. Thank you.
Next, we have Jasmine Davila. Jasmine Davila has been oversharing on the internet since 2000. She has read for the likes of Solo in the Second City, Tuesday Funk, That's All She Wrote, and 20x2. Please tweet all the cute corgi pictures to her at JasmineB.
Before I start, I was going to call this the fat ate my jumpsuit after one of my my gym suit after one of my favorite YA novels. But after I rewrote it like a couple of times, we decided to just call it Me Talk Titty One Day. So try not to be disappointed when I'm nowhere near as funny as David Sedaris. So I'm fat. Right, I think I'm actually pretty fat, actually. I'm fat pretty much everywhere, from the top of my big old Charlie Brown head to the bottoms of my Fred Flintstone feet. Fat everywhere except for two places. Here and here. Now, if I had to pick any two places on my body to be medium or even just a little undersized, it definitely would not have been in the tits. But as a fat girl, I thought, like other fat girls, that I actually had, you know, bigger breasts. I didn't know my boobs were only sort of medium size until a few years ago when I was hanging out at home with a few friends. There were four of us, three women, and a dude, my friend Dan. Dan was looking around the room, peering at us while we smoked and flipped through fashion magazines, a look of glee on his face, and explained that he was so happy to be in a room full of big-breasted women. Considering Dan's favorite word was and always will be boobies, I wasn't surprised, but it was still kind of weird that he would say that. The three of us women looked at each other, shrugged, and kindly told him to shut the fuck up before resuming smoking cigarettes and reading our fashion magazines. But then I snuck an admiring peek at my chest, squeezed my tits together with my arms like they were high-fiving each other. I could almost hear them saying, "I say, old man, splendid going there! Thank you, sir. Couldn't have managed it without you." High fives all around. Time I've come to see that I'm not big-breasted so much as I have enough body fat to sort of propel my tits up so that it looks like they're bigger than they actually are. Now, this wouldn't be a problem except that when you have to like shop for a bra, like we have a big band size but a small cup size, shopping for bras is, you know, very difficult. Even though sort of plus-size bras made for fat bitches like myself tend to think of a 42D as round, ample, melons that are symbols of fertility and body positivity, blah, blah, blah. Like a picture of a tattooed lady with dyed red hair and an hourglass figure tattooed with bluebirds posing in a beautiful bathing suit on ModCloth comes to mind. But my boobs are shaped more like those souffles that didn't rise quite right. They seem better suited for like, you know, 70s era sort of like silk jersey Halston gown that I pray could pull off one day without looking like a balloon covered in a dinner napkin. I find myself trying not to post too much in pictures, but sitting is out because I know that when I sit, I think I look a little bit like Jabba the Hutt, only with nicer tits. If the ideal breasts were the hosts were Hostess snowballs that come two to a package in various colors to match the season, then mine would be like those stale ding-dongs you find at the day-old bakery. Why do I keep talking about food when I talk about my breasts? I don't know. I'm not sure if it wouldn't be as important to me to have big boobs if it didn't feel like I was really fat in the first place. Like, I think it would be rad if I could sort of shift my fat around so I could have bigger boobs for, like, the length of a cocktail party where there are a lot of hot guys, but then, like, you know, deflate them a little bit if I have to walk through Wrigleyville on a Saturday night. But more than that, I would just love to move some of it to, like, my ass, which is, like, flat like a lot of Asian peoples are, just so I could be more comfortable sitting in one place on a chair for a few hours. And when I was in the fifth grade, certain books used to be passed around my classroom in secret. I went to a public school in New York City, and most of those places were terrible schools in the 1980s. Ketchup was a vegetable, and we didn't have a real music teacher, just a substitute whose lesson plan consisted of playing the Dirty Dancing soundtrack every day while we sang along. We had a library, but we weren't allowed to borrow any books. One of the books that made its way around the room was Judy Blume's Are You There, God? It's me, Margaret. Yeah, clap for that. I think if you're a woman of a certain age, such as myself, then between like 30 and maybe younger than, well, Judy Blume herself, you can't really think about or talk about your boobs until you have talked about, or until you've read this book. If you've not read this book, let me fill you in on what you missed while you were growing up in like a cave or wherever. Now, Margaret is an only child who, at the age of 11, moves from New York City to suburban New Jersey. Eager to make new friends, she forms a secret club, the Preteen Sensations, which is literally the greatest name for a club anywhere, anytime in history. Preteens, boobs, young adult literature, and the world in general, it's great. The club, you know, which consists of Margaret and three other girls in her neighborhood, had rules. One of which was that they had to wear a bra, something for which they check at every meeting. And you know how you check it for wearing a bra, you stick on the back strap. Every meeting is punctuated. It either began and definitely ended with an exercise, which consists of the girls pumping their arms back and forth, shouting, "I must! I must! I must increase my bust! I must! I must! I must increase my bust!" The only exercise I've ever done throughout my life was this one. In the privacy of my bedroom or the bathroom when I was growing up. It never occurred to me to form my own version of the Preteen Sensations when I was 11. The other girls in my class kept their distance, and anyway, they seemed too busy with, like, you know, Chinese school or, you know, to come to my house for, like, sugar water or furtive bust exercises in my crowded apartment. I had a brief flirtation with floor hockey in high school. I sometimes think about doing the free yoga in Millennium Park in the summer, but I prefer to sleep in, ideally after consuming many tacos in bed, and I believe that my body is an accurate reflection of that. But the thrusting, the musting of my bust into existence is a habit I just cannot give up. Just like reading Judy Blume books in my room at night, or forming not-so-secret clubs of best friends now, whose boobs come in all shapes and sizes, like snowflakes or animal crackers. I know the exercise probably had nothing to do with the tits I have today. I think what I've got has much to do with genetics and, more precisely, recently rather, precisely engineered bras from a variety of French, Belgian, and German manufacturers. But the thrusting, it's fun, it's hilarious, and a reminder that taking care of my body and caring for myself can take many forms. So back straight, chest out, arms bent, deep breath, and we go. I must increase my bust. Thank you.
Okay, next up we have Natasha Samrani, who is a stand-up comedian, writer, and storyteller. She lives and works in Chicago and has performed with Write Club, Lifeline's Filet of Solo Storytelling Festival, Chicago Ladies in Comedy, and recently, Vocalo's Music and Stories. She has written and performed sketch and improv around the city and was once described as the woman who told the story that ruined my love for peanut M&Ms. That's all right, because that just means there are more for her. Please put your hands together for Natasha Samrani.
I am going to do the stand-up thing. Give it up for your host, guys. And this amazing crowd, you're all beautiful, at least as far back as I can see. Alright. Boobs. Boobies. Breasts. Chest. Rack. Bosoms. Headlights. The girls. Your best friends. Your worst enemies. Décolletage, that French word I can never say right. And the worst one, titties. I know. They are power for good or for evil. And we all know Peter Parker's movie grandfather said, "Peter, with great power comes great responsibility. Use your spider rack for good." He probably stole that from like Sophia Loren or Marilyn Monroe. She's still current, right?
For good or for evil, this is a letter to my future daughter of the unstoppable advent and rise of her own pair of divisive forms. And to my sisters and friends here tonight, things you will learn about your pair. You're beautiful, that's all. Whatever form, size, breadth of knowledge, happiness, and understanding you are at now or tomorrow, Christina Aguilera was right. You are beautiful. You'll most likely, this is for my future daughter, be at least a C cup. Don't fight it. This is genetic. Consider it an heirloom. You'll learn to deal with attention of all kinds, wanted, unwanted, uninformed, and merited, not only from men or ladies who want something from you, but from those without social grace or etiquette. You'll sometimes feel like that pregnant woman in her third trimester. Your body is suddenly public domain for people to observe and comment on. This is partly due to bad social media and I'm not even gonna go there, never mind, because I'll go on a rant. But next, invest in the perfect bra. This is not the Victoria's Secret model version of the bra, but the perfect bra for you. And when you find that perfect bra, buy at least 10. Victoria's Secret, while we're on the subject, makes good bras for C+, C cup and above, like Forever 21 makes good shoes. Good meaning sufficient or long-lasting, functional. They don't. Next, buying matching bras and panties falls second to buying working bras and panties. People will judge you. They will assume that your breast size holds an inverse relationship to the size of your intelligence. People are stupid, and most of them are bad at math. You will learn that other people care more about your rack than you do, especially guys. You will come to hate the sound of that word, rack, and it'll even stop you from purchasing your own wine rack for your kitchen. When you step out of the dressing room in that new blouse and your dear but possibly less well-endowed good girlfriend says, you know, I have plenty of tops you could wear tonight. What she really means is, my dear sweet sister, perhaps you should sit down for this. In this shirt, your chest area resembles the fleshy part of a sea urchin. Like a homeless, overgrown sea urchin who grew out of her skeleton and now, with neither home, money, or circumstances, trying desperately to stuff her pink sea-bloated tongue of a body into the hand-me-down shell of an older but more delicate mollusk sister. Are you trying to get picked up for solicitation? When all you wish she'd say at that moment is, lady love, you look amazing. But maybe you should try it with another bra first. The girls just don't look as perky as they usually do. And we should get our toes done after this. You will become an evergreen fan of vintage, retro and pinup influenced fashion. Because unlike some of your luckier girlfriends, shopping for clothes does not follow a flexible mantra of, is it in style? Can I afford it? And do I look awesome in it? Rather, you check for fit, form, and then price. Vintage will become your best friend, and all those pinup models, your new heroes. But because for fit, form, and functionality, your personal sense of style will either soar or fail from these guidelines. Next, your grandmother will give you a corset for Christmas. This is true. Your beautiful, lovable Latina grandmother, who looked like Elizabeth Taylor when she was 16 and who prays to baby Jesus every time there's a problem, will, before the advent of Spanx, call you into your mother's bedroom, neutral ground, and she will give you a package wrapped in Santa paper that you think is going to be that radio that you wanted, and you will open it. And you will realize that corsets still exist. Lycra and spandex are the new whalebone and lace. Under guise of holiday gift and with the appeasing affectations of Not that you need it. She won't put it under the tree. She will just hand it to you. More than once. And suddenly, you will start checking yourself in the mirror before you go down for breakfast whenever Grandma visits, and for the next 2 years. But then you will realize 2 years later, when you are older and wiser and have moved out of your parents' house, you will unpack your boxes into your first studio apartment. And at the bottom of that third box, marked miscellaneous crap, you'll come across what looks like a forgotten Christmas present, half open in really cheesy Santa paper, and find that horrible, terrible, insulting, and uncomfortable anti-feminist symbol of patriarchal control and beauty standard, and you'll put it to the side. And then 9 days into grad school, when you're forcing yourself to go salsa dancing for a night out of that tiny claustrophobic apartment before your brain explodes from reading one more pretentious critique of Saeed's Orientalism, you will try to unwrap that hesitant little gift and just try it on once under that red dress that you have that flips perfectly when you twirl. And you'll look in the mirror and say under your breath, "Here goes nothing. Thank you, Grandma. And baby Jesus, I'm so sorry I ever doubted you." This is pretty heavy stuff, right? Let's break for a minute. List of don'ts, if your boobs are a concern. Button-down shirts, we visited that. Horizontal stripes, baby doll shirts. They look like mini maternity boo-boos. Cammies, this is a code word for more sheer spaghetti strap version of a tank top. You still need a bra in that. Running without a sports bra. Volleyball without a sports bra. Any high impact sport without a sports bra. Any sport without a sports bra. Are we seeing a pattern? Competitive swimming is the only sport exempt from this specific application, as a good suit has enough spandex and lycra to hold a pregnant woman's breaking water at bay for at least 15 minutes. And all of these rules can be broken if you have a good tailor. You will learn that a good tailor is your best friend. No, your best man or maid of honor at your wedding, if you get married. Your fiance should be informed that wedding party draft rights are now part of your prenup. Intimacy. The first time a guy touches you there, you might feel ashamed. And it's okay. This is normal and part of growing up. They are just part of your body. Something that you could neither stop nor ask for. You are a woman, and they are mysterious nurturing organs for your future children. Then why do you feel so much shame? You will learn that the same two things that make you feel shame or uncertainty at first on your own body can still make you feel comforted and unafraid when you are hugged against them on your mother's body or your grandmother or your sister, and that this is why they are magical. And the moment you hold your first child to your breast, everything will change. Your mom will make you practice walking across the kitchen floor, back and forth in your first pair of heels with a book on your head, shoulders back, chest out, and stomach in, while she irons and spaghetti sauce simmers on the stove. And you won't appreciate this until you're at least 18, when you're more than a teenager, but not quite a woman. And you have to go in for your first big interview that matters. You will put on your first tailored suit, pencil skirt, and matching portfolio case, and think, "I really want this job. I really want to impress them. I need to impress them. What if my writing is not enough to impress them? I should wear those heels my mom bought me." You nervously slide them on over miracle pantyhose that you scrounged up from the bottom of your hamper, the only pair out of seven that don't have a run in them. And you stand in front of your mirror, shoulders back, chest out, stomach in. You smile and say, "Thank you, Mom." And suddenly you think, "Wait, didn't she say I made her go through 36 hours of labor when I was born?" And you will see the connection between that and the time in the kitchen. You will learn that there's an interesting law of physics.
You may be wearing an undergarment that keeps letting the girls peek out, but somehow that cell phone or credit card that you stuck in there for safekeeping hasn't budged. You won't understand this, but you will learn it when your double E aunt from West Virginia teaches you this when you're in the middle of the Amazon jungle, stopping for lunch, and she starts pulling out her entire collection of jewelry from there, because she didn't want to leave it in the hostel. You will learn that men like their breasts like they like their beers. In their hand, between their lips, or perhaps in the style of the first summer barbecue after a long Chicago winter. Free, unlimited, and with no judgment from you, thank you. You will learn that boys are gross, but most of them have good intentions. But your happiness and safety come first, and that you owe the world nothing. You will also learn that mammograms are uncomfortable for everyone, no matter what your size, but especially if you're short. Oh. Yeah. And they won't let you wear heels. Give it 100 more years, and maybe the actual average height of the human woman will have surpassed 5'6" by then, and our bodies will actually catch up to cancer imaging technology. There is no better feeling in the world for women with bigger chests than finding the perfect bra that will hold them in place all day. Except for the feeling of taking that perfect bra off at the end of the day, when you walk in through your apartment, unsnap it, and fling it across the room. Ask almost any bra-wearing woman in here, there is a place that she knows she can always find an extra undergarment if she needs it the next day. It's over that cookie jar between the couch, and the only reason why is because that's where it lands. And finally, you will learn that despite what every other country song says, you cannot drink all of your problems away. Believe me, I've tried. Thank you.
Thanks, Natasha. And next up we have Alicia Swizz. Alicia Swizz is a performer of stories, stand-up, and feminist rants. She is a professor of humanities at Harold Washington College and features editor at The Urbanist, an online lifestyle magazine for women in Chicago. She'll be performing next at Snubfest, June 8th at Zany's. Follow her on Twitter at Pop Goes Alicia.
Or anywhere. Anywhere. Hey, everybody. Thanks for coming. This is a great crowd. Yeah. And boobs. So there's that. Can y'all hear me? You can hear yourself. I know you can. When I tell people that I had a breast reduction, they always respond with surprise. Really? No. What'd you do with the leftovers? I tell women more than men. It's one of those female rites of passages, you know, talking about your boobs. Men usually respond awkwardly, attempting not to look directly at my boobs and fumbling for something to say other than the one thing they want to say. Which is exactly what the women say while looking directly at my chest. How big were they? I don't have an accurate stat, but I'd be willing to bet that that has been the response from 90% of the women that I've told throughout my life. It makes sense. It seems like a harmless quantitative question to ask, but I hate this question. I hate this question because when they ask it, they are trying to decide if my decision was warranted. They want to know if my actions were necessary, if I was uncomfortable enough, or if my boobs were big enough to make the surgery justified. It places a certain value on my choice and on my body. They'd have to be ridiculously big for me to want to do something like that because, come on, every girl wants big boobs. Not me. I always hated my boobs. I hated the way they made me look, I hated the way they made me feel, but most of all, I hated all the attention that they brought me. So many unwanted and uncertain behaviors are associated with them. Teasing, taunting, ridicule, jealousy, lust, envy. Having big boobs has been the sharpest of all the double-edged swords that has defined my female experience. The first person to draw attention to my boobs was Melissa Thorne's mom. Melissa and I had been laying out in her yard. I'm from New Jersey. And I was wearing my first bikini. Her mom walked up the driveway with both her brothers in tow and squealed, "Oh, look at Alicia in her little suit," reaching out and grabbing my area. "You really got something holding it up, don't ya?" I guess I did. A few weeks later, at the end of the year picnic for the sixth grade class, I was accused by another girl of stuffing my bra, which I found to be ridiculous. Who would want to look like this? Why would anyone go through the trouble of pretending? What escalated to a highly volatile shouting match over the authenticity of my body was finally resolved by Melissa's said best friend, who yanked down my tank top and exposed one of my boobs to the entire posse of sixth graders that had assembled around us. I was 11. This was just the beginning, people. At gymnastics, the girls asked me, "Why are you wearing two leotards?" In gym class, the popular girls talked loudly about how their boyfriends like their boobs small and just a handful, sending pointed looks my way so I would know that mine were too big, which made me the outcast, the unattractive one, the loser. Finally, in ninth grade, there was another girl who had boobs bigger than mine, and she seemed to mind it all. It was she who imparted on me the following wisdom. "You should date like black guys or Puerto Rican guys. Black guys will like you because you're blonde." They love blonde girls, because you know black girls can't get blonde hair. "And Puerto Rican guys will like your curves, but it's good because you're short, because they're short. And no guy likes a girl who's taller than them." "That's why Manny, my boyfriend, likes me, because I'm short and I have big boobs." "Yeah, but I didn't want any of the boys to like me, at least not my body and not like that." Things were starting to happen that were getting a little out of my control and way beyond my understanding. My sexuality felt like something foreign and scary that belonged to someone else. It belonged to my father's friends who ogled me while sitting on the couch drinking beer. It belonged to my next door neighbor's grandfather who tried to French kiss me in the car. Come to Guts and Glory for that story. It belonged to the boy who groped me in the middle of a dance floor. It belonged to the girls who called me a slut, even though I had never kissed a boy. My body said something to people, and it was my boobs who were speaking the loudest and clearest. They completely dominated my personality and burdened me with the responsibility of becoming a sexual being, a sexual object, way before I was prepared to be. And then there was superficial stuff. Like, I looked 10 pounds heavier than I actually was. And no longer being able to find bathing suits that fit. In high school, I had a complete meltdown in a department store dressing room trying to find a prom dress. Nothing fit, nothing fit, nothing fit. Just the old lady dresses. I sobbed on the floor of Macy's. My mom was really surprised. It was the 90s and grunge was in, so I had been buried under flannel, even though it was South Florida. When I was 19, I had a breast reduction. It was covered by insurance, which means I can say it was for medical purposes, and it very well could have been. I was a dancer, I was an athlete, and my 80-year-old grandmother now has indented deep welts on her shoulders from years of carrying boobs that were too big for her frame. But the truth is, I just hated being the girl with big boobs. I needed to change my body in order to change who I was going to be in the world. Having cosmetically modified my body is not something I am fully comfortable with. I blamed nearly all of my adolescent unhappiness on dissatisfaction with my body because of my big old fucking boobs. But in reality, it's our culture's obsession with boobs, our acceptance of bullshit beauty norms, and the judgment we allow on our own and other women's bodies. Instead of standing up to those patriarchal systems that my since-developed feminism has taught me to dismantle, I got in bed with the enemy. Worse yet, I went under the knife with that motherfucker, and I sacrificed myself for the status quo, No, you don't have to change your inappropriate, barbaric, lewd, and disgusting behavior. I'll modify my body. I'll change so you don't have to. Of course, I didn't get all of that at 11, at 13, even at 19. In the years following my surgery, I lived in Manhattan, got 2 degrees, including a master's degree in women's and gender studies, and since then have been teaching media and gender studies at the higher level for the past 5 years. A few semesters ago, while prepping for class, I was screening Misrepresentation, which if you haven't seen it, go home and watch it, for class. There's a moment in the film where they mention that the most asked for gift by 16-year-old girls is breast augmentation surgery, meaning enhancement surgery. As I was sitting there in my kitchen making lunch and prepping for class, I just broke down crying because I was one of those 16-year-old girls. I was the girl that wanted to change my body, that wanted it to be different, that wanted to modify myself just to make it easier to participate in our fucked up culture. I was that girl. At the end of the semester, the first time I showed this film, 2 girl students came up to me. Miss Swizz, they said with tears in their eyes. I never even thought about so many of the things you made us think about in class, and watching that documentary and thinking about our bodies and the way they're treated and the way we look and the way the media has effect on it, this class has just changed our lives. And in that moment, I realized I'm that girl. I'm the girl speaking up, changing lives, and allowing other women to see themselves they really should be, powerful, beautiful, and full of life. Thank you.
Thank you, Alicia, that was wonderful. Okay, Samantha Irby, if you join us. Tell me that that's the reason you're here. It's okay, my feelings won't be hurt.
Samantha Irby recently published a collection of essays called Meaty. If you haven't seen it yet,
you
should.
Oh, you look fabulous.
I love my
tits. Yeah, good.
Good. And you can find her blog at, come on, bitchesgottaeat.com. Give it up for
walk to school and knew immediately that it would be absolutely perfect. A large, glistening dog turd, slick and glossy under the early morning sun, just sitting there covered in fat, lazy, end-of-summer flies in the damp grass that in 3 hours was going to serve as the outfield for the softball game during gym. I was listening to a ka-single. Of Color Me Bad's I Adore Mia Moore. It's the jam. On repeat on my Walkman, which was not the bright yellow sporty kind with the much coveted auto reverse, because I was not fucking cool. I had to stop and rewind my shit, or worse, listen to the dreaded B-side of the tape. In the second grade, I had to wear an eye patch. Not of the sexy, glamorous variety fictional pirates wore. Mine was a circle of wobbly, fake flesh that adhered directly to the skin surrounding the lazy eye it was designed to correct. Don't feel bad, I'm awesome now. 1987 was before political correctness was a real thing, so skin tone meant white skin, and it stood out in stark contrast to the brown face around it. Mom said that no one would notice, but that was a lie, because I looked like a fucking alien, and how could you not notice a person with a slick blob of melted Barbie skin where her right eye should be? Allison R. wore a bra in 1992, and not just any bra, a bra with cups, which meant she was probably going to have sex soon. I was still wearing an undershirt tucked tightly into my corduroys, which meant I was never going to have sex ever. We knew about the bra because in the locker room, she made a big elaborate show of removing whichever of her many lacy underwire bras she'd worn that day and carefully hanging it over the shower rod while she replaced it with a boring, stretchy cotton one more suitable for sports. This Broadway production always took place smack in the center of the locker room, where none of us could shield our eyes from the glare of her stark white nakedness. I changed into my gym clothes in the lone bathroom stall in the girls' locker room because I have a large cherry red birthmark splashed across my belly that I nicknamed Mikhail Gorbachev. I'll show it to you later. It's like all here. Okay. Once a girl asked me if someone had thrown a tomato at me, and the peals of laughter that ensued ensured that I would never change in front of those squealing pigs ever again. I slipped out of my socks and tucked them into the pockets of my school-issued shorts before securing the Velcro on my gym shoes extra tight. The bra had been hanging next to the first shower, the one with the warmest water that bitch always claimed for herself. Today's model, a lacy pink with a tiny red rosebud in the center. I listened inside my stall for the locker room to empty around me and shoved it into the front of my underwear, then raced to join my unsuspecting classmates outside. Allison never picked me for her team, but that was fine because I knew Matt would, and I slowly made my way out to right field before they had even finished handing out assignments. I rolled a dishwater gray gym sock onto my right hand with my left, careful to avoid any unwanted attention while making a beeline for that huge pile of shit I'd spotted earlier in the day. That's right. Irby, you're out too far, Mr. Pavick shouted helpfully, waving for me to move closer in field, and I made a motion like I didn't understand English while inching closer and closer to the edge of the field and out of his sight line. I fished the bra out of my underpants and carefully used my sock hand to fill each flimsy cup with dog shit. I really smushed it into the lace. Danny Hodgman smirked at me from center field and moved closer to cover the outfield for me when he realized what I was doing. I hate this bitch, I shouted to him. And he nodded solemnly in agreement. I threw the sock over the fence onto the little kid playground for some unsuspecting toddler to find. I carried some of the heavy metal bats in after our win, the telltale bra ticking ominously next to them as they bumped and clanged around inside the bag, racing ahead of my classmates who were in no hurry to get inside for science class. I looped that bra over the shower rod without anyone noticing. 3 minutes later, I heard the screams, laughing into my cupped hand inside my single stall. And this is how a girl, once called Cyclops, exacted revenge against the dumb asshole who had given her that name, the newly christened Shitties.
Sam Irby, everyone. We have one more reader. Thanks so much. We'll probably say some stuff at the end, but. Rosamund Lannon, the product of 9 years in San Francisco and 8 years in St. Paul, Rosamund Lannon is pleasantly surprised to have lived in Chicago for over a decade. By day, she does something involving projects and management. By night, she co-produces Misspoken, the blog, miss-spoken.com, and Live Lit Show along with me. And above all, she's just happy to be here. Put your hands together for Rose!
Following Samantha Irby is kind of my nightmare, but I'm gonna breathe quietly into a bag for a second and get going. All right. Not so long ago, I noticed something wrong on the internet about boobs. Surprisingly, it wasn't porn. It was something more quiet and strange, but maybe not so strange at all. Two women I respected didn't like their boobs, or at the very least, did not view them in the positive, fuck yeah, boobs light that I was anticipating. The way they view their chests hit me hard and continues to stick with me for reasons I'll try to describe. The first woman was a webcomics artist. She drew a fun and empathetic comic about weight loss and in one strip was talking about getting a new bra, a better bra, after years of squishing them into the wrong size minimizer, flattening them down with a Bali 38D. It sucks that she felt she needed to hide them, I thought, as if the idea of noticeable breasts was somehow offensive, gross, overtly sexual. This is good, this is really good. But not really. I fast-forwarded a few strips where she's looking for a dress to wear to a wedding. She runs into a problem common to many of us busty ladies. It fits everywhere but up top. In the comments, she's dropped a phrase that stuck out to me far more than her boobs ever would. I have always felt like an A cup personality in a double D cup body. What the fuck? A cup personality? What the fuck does that even mean? The second woman wrote about video games. Like the first, she's funny and smart and describes herself as a feminist. She's also a busty lady, although she hasn't always been. In her well-written article, I Was a Teenage Misogynist, she writes about how she was very suddenly possessed of the chest of a bimbo, referring to her abrupt development at age 24. Chest of a bimbo, A-cup personality. The message was clear to me. A big chest is slutty, ostentatious, unwelcome. Part of me understands that last part on a very personal and everyday level. I mean, boobs are serious, annoying business. There's the back aches, the automatic hunch, shoulder straps that dig in deep, leaving red ridges and marks on disproportionately small shoulders. Bras that cost $1 million and look like something your grandma would wear. No cute $18 polka dot bras at Target for you, ever. Clothing rarely fits well, it just doesn't. I mean, as we mentioned before, button downs and empire waist are your enemy. Your boobs are literally and figuratively heavy and sometimes painful. You can't hide them, and if you try, you look fat or dowdy or sometimes even pregnant. There are a lot of reasons not to like your boobs, but I'm pretty into mine. Maybe it's because I always wanted them. When I was a young lady, like many young ladies, when I was 11, I asked my mom for a training bra. I needed one, I told her. I needed one really, really bad. I did not need a training bra. My chest was flat. I weighed 60 pounds soaking wet, a fact my mom's 17-year-old employee, Jason, was quick to bring up when I confided to him that I was talking to boys, or maybe men, I don't know, in Yahoo chat rooms. We were sitting in my parents' car, waiting for my mom to finish cleaning up, and his eyes sparkled as I shared my online moniker, Blue Angel 99. Ooh, girl, what's your profile say? 4'9", St. Paul, Minnesota, 11 years old, 60 pounds, built like a stick, that's sexy. I turned red and mentally made a note to change my age from 14 to 16 in my profile. He turned up the radio, mercifully moving on from my lack of womanly assets. Rose, you're so crazy, I think I want to have your baby. I laughed until I hiccuped, embarrassment over my short, up and down body momentarily forgotten. A few years later, I would fill out and he would figure out he was gay. But at that point, he was kind of confused and I was flat as a board. I wanted a training bra because I thought it would somehow give me boobs, because boobs meant everything beautiful. My sister had them, and she was beautiful, and I wanted to look like her. Boys liked them, and I wanted boys to like me. My grandmother speculated on mine, which was super embarrassing. She thought I would be small-chested like her, conveniently neglecting, as she did so many other times, my mother's role in my genetic makeup. I proved grandma so wrong. That training bra didn't stand a chance. I was a C cup by age 13, a double D by high school, and something even further down the alphabet today. And most days, I'm pretty happy about it, but not everyone is. These women sent a message, one echoed in other corners of the internet, as well as real life. Smart, unconventional girls aren't supposed to have big boobs. And if they are, they aren't supposed to like them. Big boobs are for Playboy, cheerleaders, Victoria's Secret models, the girls that made fun of us in high school. Being stacked means you're a slut. You're playing into society's idea of attractiveness, and really, how could you? You're smarter than that. We're smarter than that. I hate this message not only because it's one more way to be ashamed, but because it's women saying it. You know, smart women. Women who, in theory, preach a gospel of body acceptance and self-love, but will throw themselves, and in the process, everyone else, under the bus over a letter and a number on a strip of elastic. It feels like a dirty trick. I expect this attitude from a lot of the outside world, but not from clever, smart girls that create and make and do. Not from a group I count on to help cut through a culture that is quick to tell you you're too much or not enough or somehow just not right. Being stacked is something I've always felt good about for reasons both healthy and otherwise. There are prettier girls, taller girls, thinner girls, girls with long legs and thick hair, girls with great asses and perfect skin. I could go on, but I think you get the idea. Let me have this body part and be more or less good with it, and sometimes even happy about how I look in a tank top. Webcomic girl and lady writer, you don't have to be okay with your boobs. That's okay, I'll lay mine out for both of us. But think about what you're saying when you imply that having a physical attribute makes you not the right type of person, because there's a right way to look and a right way to be, and they always line up. I hate to break it to you, but there is no A-cup personality, and there is no bimbo chest. They're just personalities, and sometimes they come with boobs, and personalities and boobs together are pretty great. Think about what you're saying. And I promise you, before I complain about my fat ass or flat ass or hobbit height, I'll try to do the same. Thank you.
Also Wednesday, and the theme is going to be debt. I know that's not as fun as boobs, but July is period, so woo! Come back! Anyway, thank you so much, and check out the website if you're interested in participating. We'd love to hear from you. There's an email address. Is there anything else you want to add?
Yeah, if you check out the website, there's more stories like this on it, and hope to see you on June 18th. We're going to be doing that one a little bit early, but from after June, we'll be doing the last Wednesday of the month. So yeah, keep an eye out. Thank you so much for coming. I hope you had a good time.
Thank you for listening. Visit miss-spoken.com for weekly blog posts, information on our next show, and how to get involved.